And good evening, everyone. I'm Emily Kwong, KCAW reporter. Robert Woolsey is our news director. He'll be engineering at the back. We are Raven News. And this is Raven Radio's live candidate forum. Welcome. Can I get an applause from our live audience here? We are live, coming to you live from Harrigan Centennial Hall. And tonight we'll be hearing from the men and women running for the Sitka Assembly. Elections are Tuesday, October 2nd. Early and absentee voting has begun, and our evening program is going to run like this. For the first hour, we're going to hear from these five candidates running for two open seats on the Assembly, currently held by Bob Petruski and Ben Miyasato. We'll take a break around 6:55 so everyone in the audience can stretch their legs, and you listening at home can too. And then at 7 o'clock, Robert Woolsey and I are going to change places, and he'll be hosting a conversation with the three mayoral candidates. So this isn't a debate, no pounding your fists on the table. This isn't Parliament. It's more of a gathering of minds to compare their opinions and views on the city, and a chance for voters to learn where these folks stand on key issues. It takes some courage to run for public office, so I thank you for doing so and for participating. Let's begin. So, your Assembly candidates, from going away from me down the table, are Brennan Carter, Sheila Finkenbinder, Blossom Twitchell, Kevin Mosher, and Valerie Nelson. That is the order they will be speaking in. I will be saying their name when I remember, or they will. I've asked each candidate to make a two-minute opening statement. After that, we'll pose questions. Our timekeeper is Erin Slomsky-Pritz in the front row. She'll hold up a card when it's 30 seconds left and a card telling you to stop when it is time to stop. So let's begin with Brennan Carter, an opening statement about who you are and why you are running for the Sitka Assembly.
Hi, my name is Brennan Carter, and I'll just start out with sort of a little bit of a deep bio. I'm originally from Florida, a little town in central Florida called DeLand, and I grew up there until I was about 15 or 16 years old, and then I went off to college. I'm an archaeologist by training and a historian. I have a doctoral degree from University of Florida in underwater archaeology. I've had a 20-year career with the National Park Service, including work as a museum specialist, a cultural resource manager for a park, and now the resource manager at the park here in town. I've had to teach myself a lot of things, starting with expanding from archaeology into history and facilities and now strategic planning. I like to fish and I like to hunt here. I like to do it with my grandfather down in Florida, and I've picked it back up here in Sitka. So, and it's a great place to do both of those things. So in terms of why I'd like to be an Assembly member, I think that I've gained a lot of experience over the years in my work, and I believe that I can apply that knowledge to local government and to governance here in Sitka. And I'd also like to really work with whoever's elected and the standing Assembly members, because I think if we work together, we can get some of the really serious problems we've got here in town figured out.
Thank you, Brennan Carter. Sheila Finkenbinder, your opening statement.
Hi, I'm Sheila Finkenbinder. Very briefly, born in Florida, raised in near Seattle on Mercer Island. Married my husband. We moved to the Southwest, Texas. We lived everywhere from Texas to Idaho, doing kind of odd jobs, being self-employed, doing some teaching. And then in 1990, we decided to come to Alaska, so we bought a sailboat and sailed to Alaska. So ended up here with basically no money. Definitely learned that this is a place that's tough to live with without a whole lot of money. So I found myself employed mostly in job training programs, first at the Teen Center, then at Sitka Tribe of Alaska, and then I formed my own organization, Sitka Works. an interesting story. When I formed SyncaWorks, I had to go to the bank and borrow money. And I told the banker that part of what I wanted to do was help people start small businesses. And she said, well, there's only so many small businesses that can be started in a town of 9,000 people. And I knew she was wrong. And we certainly proved her wrong, because so many businesses have started through SyncaWorks and since then in this community. And really, the sky's the limit as far as what can happen here in Sitka. So I've gotten to know a lot of people through my work at all these different organizations, including working at the legislature and Chamber of Commerce. So I became pretty active in the community through work and volunteer experience. I've thought about running for assembly several times over the years. I have the time now, and I believe that I can use my experience well to serve the town on the assembly. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila Finkenbinder. And next to her is Blossom Twitchell.
Good evening. I'm Blossom Twitchell. I have lived in Sitka for 23 years. I've been in Alaska all of my life. I was born in Kotzebue and raised in Fairbanks.
Try putting the microphone to the side of your mouth. That's one thing that helps me. There you go.
My mother is Mrs. Teal. She also lives in Sitka. I am raising my three children here, and I'm currently working at the Sitka Tribe of Alaska in social services. I run their financial assistance programs, and I'm running for the assembly because of my job. This past few years, I've seen firsthand how desperate Sitkans have become. And I had many discussions on many different levels on what can be done, how we could apply them, and what needs to be done in order to see families successful. That's why I'm running. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Blossom. And Kevin Mosher, your opening statement.
Hi, my name is Kevin Mosher. Real quick about myself. I was born on the East Coast in Ohio and raised there a bit, and then graduated from high school in New Jersey. Right after high school, I went to Coast Guard boot camp and ended up in Sitka on the Coast Guard Cutter Woodrush in 1993. I served until 1996, where I got out and decided to. It was about 6 months, I think I've told people before, of culture shock, and then I fell in love with Sitka and decided to make it my home. So when I got out, I ended up meeting my wife, Teresa, and we went to college together for 4 years, and we got our degrees at the University of Alaska Southeast in business administration with an emphasis in management. We have five children together. So I've lived here since 93. It's about 25 years. the reason why I'm running is because I would like, well, the cost of living has increased, and it seems that it is only going to go up, and people are leaving town, unfortunately, and I would like to fight for Sitka to make it the place that we all love, to allow it to be, help make it more affordable so that people can stay, and preferably, hopefully, more people will come to Sitka and stay. It's a beautiful, wonderful place, and I'm here to fight for Sitka. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's Kevin Mosher. And Valerie Nelson, your opening statement.
Got to figure out if I know these new technologies. I'm a 6-plus-year-decade resident of Sitka. Unfortunately, I wasn't born here. I was born in a naval hospital on the East Coast. My seven brothers and sisters were all born and raised here, and six of them still reside here and hope to reside here. I have two children, four stepchildren, 13 grandchildren. I have a mother that is currently in the Pioneer Home and struggling even with the financial assistance that she gets. And the reason why I chose to run for assembly again is pretty much the same reasons why I ran and was elected 20 years ago. I see that the costs of living have increased exponentially, especially for our senior citizens. When we revoked the senior sales tax, I see how much my mother struggles because I handle her finances. When the senior sales tax was revoked, I started paying some of her bills personally. So I know if she's in that situation, others are hurting a lot more because they may not have children that have the means to assist them. I work at the USDA Forest Service. I'm getting old enough where I'm hopeful that I can retire someday. I hope that I can make enough money in retirement to remain here. It's my home, and I love it, and I love that we are a community that pulls together in times of strife. I'm hoping that we have a good turnout, and I'm hoping that our former administrator, Mr. Paxton, is elected mayor as one of the best mayors I believe we ever had was Rocky Gutierrez, and he was a former city administrator. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let's give a round of applause, actually, for our candidates. In their opening statements, we've learned that the microphones at Harrigan Centennial Hall have been particularly sensitive today. They're just having feelings. So I would suggest that you back away from them a little more than you normally would. And I will try to do the same so those of you listening at home don't have your ears blasted off. So now, time for questions. Citizens sent so many questions that I feel compelled to ask those questions first before opening it up to you audience members, if that's okay. We're going to have two-minute timers again so we can get through as many citizen questions as possible. If you want to respond in a sentence, be my guest. You don't have to fill the 2 minutes. Aaron is timing, and as we go down the line, we will have the first question asked down the row. So Sheila, you will be the first to ask this question, and then Blossom, and then Kevin, and then Valerie, and then back to Brennan. All right. This one came from John today, and I think it's pertinent given the power outage this weekend. Sitka's infrastructure is aging and in some respects failing. This is some context, not from John, but from me. City employees have repeatedly said that the way to repair the infrastructure and replace it is by raising utility rates. And I want to know what John wants to know as well. His question is, please explain as specifically as possible your approach toward balancing fiscal responsibility and maintaining our aging infrastructure. So, as specific as you can be, how would you balance fiscal responsibility and maintaining our aging infrastructure? The Assembly has responsibility over the general fund budget, all the enterprise fund budgets, and other funds as well. We're going to start with Sheila Finkenbinder with that question.
Yeah, thanks. That's pretty tough to get real specific about being not a current Assembly member, but a candidate. We all know that we have some serious issues that we have to deal with. I heard that not only was the power out, but there were some overages that caused damage to appliances throughout town, voltage spikes. So we all know that it's going to be pretty tough, and I think that probably the carefulest way that we can go about balancing the budget and being responsible is going to be an across-the-board cuts, because none of us sees specific things in town that we really want to do without. So I'm going to say across the board.
Across the board, look. Okay. And Blossom Twitchell, same question.
Thank you, Emily. Blossom Twitchell, specifically in 2 minutes, you're going to have to look at the budget. The budget is going to say a lot of things, and that's going to mean cuts. As of right now, if you look at what the city is doing with the bonds, it's going to be a balancing act of looking at what bonds will be doable, what bonds are not feasible. It's a time to look 100% at what we can do as a whole in order to make sure that our families stay sustainable. And that means also strengthening what we do have, looking at our tourism industry, looking at what we can do in the long run. What we can do right now is plan ahead and work for our generations to come. And that's what didn't happen, unfortunately, years ago. And that's why we're in this situation now. It's really looking at how to live off what the city can do without oil money. And that's what every city in Alaska is trying to figure out. Thank you.
That was Blossom Twitchell. Kevin Mosher.
Hello. this is a tough question, and I knew it would come up, and I'm glad it came up. My answer to that is obviously, yes, we need to be looking at the city budget. And I've said this at an interview recently. I respect the people at the city of Sitka. I think they're a hard-working bunch. But I'm just not fully convinced that we have tightened the belt, so to speak. I'm not about going around and just firing everybody, but I think there's some things that you can be done. Perhaps, cuts through attrition. Also, and other unneeded expenses. And I know it's not an easy thing, and it's easier said than done. And I understand that. But a line-by-line look needs to be made at the budget. Another thing I think that needs to be done is, one, I'm not promising to never raise rates, but there's a basic philosophy. I mean, you can raise rates so much, and I think we're at the tipping point, or already have crossed it, where you raise them now, the more you raise them, the less people use. So I think we should maintain the rates as is. If I had my way, we'd reduce rates. What we need to be doing is doing things to encourage usage, and you encourage usage by making the product, which in this case is electricity, more affordable, and so more people use it. So more people use it, the more money you have. And possibly when more people realize there's better cost of living, people are staying and not leaving. Maybe people are moving here, more people living here, more people using the product, more money we have. Another idea, this is a brainstorming idea. I have no idea if this is possible, but the sales of city land has become a big priority, and assembly made a move to allow for that. Currently, sale of city lands is mandated by the charter to go to the permanent fund. I think that it'd be great to allow the people of Sitka to vote to change that, to allow the sale of city lands to go into a fund to pay for these capital projects so that rate increases are not as urgent. I don't know what the dollar value or the inventory of the land, but I think land sales would be great to be used to pay for those critical infrastructure projects.
Thank you, Kevin Mosher. And Valerie Nelson.
Specifically, what I would do is encourage reduction of rates. We've gone from an effective rate in 2015, which includes your base meter rate, of about 12 cents per kilowatt hour to 21.5 cents right now. That's a lot. And people have stopped using electricity. Our utility bill used to be 2,000 kilowatts. And when we got the first $800 utility bill, granted that includes garbage, water, and sewer that have gone up exponentially as well, I said, all right, I'm going to start wearing 3 layers of fleece. I'm not going to bake anymore like I used to for everybody in town. I'll use the microwave. And people get, as creative as they can because they're choosing to heat or eat. And in the winter, you want that heat, so it's just a catch-22 situation. I would look at using maybe funds from our permanent fund. The last time I was sitting on the other side of the assembly table, it was fairly large, and there's got to be other creative ways other than putting the rate increases on the backs of the residential ratepayers. I also see businesses struggling because the small businesses like storage areas, my husband and I have some, our rates for utilities have quadrupled since they've started all this increase. Yes, I do know that we have infrastructure needs, but there's got to be a way to do it that doesn't take it to the backs of the residential ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Valerie Nelson and Brennan Carter.
Okay. I think the way I look at it, there are six critical infrastructure systems in the city. There's the electrical grid, the water system, the sewer system, the road network, the stormwater system, and the harbors. those critical systems are ones where we have to pay for repairs to them, either out of revenue that comes into the enterprise funds that have been set up for each one of these, or through bonding of some kind. The electrical system obviously is generally paid for by rates, and of course they've gone up quite a lot. I think we're going to be paying off the Blue Lake Dam for a long time. I think the original calculus on that as a $50 million project was wildly wrong, and it ended up costing close to $150 million. And I don't think that there's any way that we can escape having to pay for that bond. I do think that we need to look at the life cycle of each one of these systems that I've mentioned and be sure that each system is used to its maximum length of time, because that's how you get value out of the system. And you have to carefully evaluate it towards the end of the life cycle of that system, whether you have the revenue to either build it again in cash, or whether you have to bond for it again. And just my general philosophy on infrastructure bonds, I think they're a necessary part of municipal government, but I do think that bonds need to be taken out very carefully. They need to be only taken out for about half the length of the system itself, or for only a portion of the reconstruction costs, or have good matching. So
thank you so much, Brennan Carter, and all of you for answering an infrastructure question right off the bat. I have another question from already submitted, and then we're going to open up to the audience. This question is from current Assembly Member Bob Petruski, and it's an interesting one and useful, I think, because a lot of the times, this is my third time hosting a forum, it's like asking people to look into a crystal ball that they don't have the special goggles for. You don't have all the information that current Assembly members and city staff do. Some of that is proprietary. You have it's like drinking from a fire hose when you join the Assembly for the first time. So this question is more about process and about how you behave and expect you would behave as an Assembly member. Bob's question: what should the role of Assembly members be in the day-to-day operations of the city? Also, where would you get the information necessary to make decisions at the Assembly table? What should the role of Assembly members be in the day-to-day operations of the city? Maybe what you wish your Assembly members would do. And where would you get the information necessary to make decisions every other week when you come to the table? Blossom Twitchell is going to answer this question first. Blossom.
Thank you, Emily. As an Assembly member, I think right off the bat, you are an elected official and you represent the people who voted for you. So in respect, I would be an Assembly member and represent those who voted me in. And that means listening to them and bringing their voice to each meeting that I attend. What I would do and how I would act as an Assembly member means that I would wake up every day and listen to the news and be informed, listen to the people, read, hear, investigate. Also, read the Assembly minutes. Investigate old Assembly minutes. Look at the different actions that have happened in the past and learn from the mistakes, and also plan out new and informed decisions that would benefit Sitka as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Blossom Twitchell. And Kevin Mosher.
Hi. So for part one of this question, what role should the Assembly be in the day-to-day operating of the city? As far as I understand it, what I've learned is this. The Assembly is the governing body, and they speak direction to the administrator and also to the legal council as one voice, meaning the voted. I can't just meander down to City Hall and start barking orders, and that I would. So in that respect, yes, we as a vote, I think that also, though, we could have a very positive and healthy relationship. And so this feeds into the second question, where information we're going to get. One is the assembly minutes. Two is from having a healthy relationship with the administrator and possibly department heads. To go to City Hall and ask information, I think it probably would be most likely going through the administrator, and he can just ask or point you to who you need to talk to get that information if it's regarding the city. So we have the minutes, we have that, and then also talking to people. A lot of this is going out and into the community and getting the heart and taste of what people are really thinking, what they really want, and what they are. And then the other is to mind blank here. Do the research yourself, individual research, not just going off hearsay. Also, the best thing to do is not just look at what is put in the assembly minutes as fact, although some of it may be fact. And I'm not saying there is no untruths. What I'm saying is we have to make decisions on our own, not just what's fed to us. We need to do the individual research and the homework, and it's a lot of work. But we need to try, with the time that we have, to get all the facts, as many of the facts as we can. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Kevin Mosher, Valerie Nelson.
I agree with Kevin in the day-to-day operations, so I'm not going to repeat that. As far as what would I do to get info and make decisions, I have a reputation for doing my homework. I know my way around the law library. I know how to Google or gurgle, as my husband would say. I'm a very good researcher. I have always had good rapport with a number of the staff at City Hall. And sitting on the assembly and as mayor, a few decades ago, I have lots of the past history in my piles and piles of paperwork. So I don't think I have any problem finding information. Thank you.
And Valerie Nelson, thank you. Brennan Carter, same question.
Okay. First of all, at the first part of that question, how to interact day to day, I think that the assembly is in a interesting position in the sense that they're held accountable for the actions of the entire city government, which means that the quality and the integrity of the information that comes from city employees needs to be impeccable, because citizens are not going to come to individual city employees with the ultimate questions about particular agenda items or actions of the city. They're going to come to the assembly person. So what does that mean? I think it means that as an assembly, you really have to set the expectations for the quality of information you need from the administrator and from the city employees that report to the administrator. And you need to have sufficient information for any action items that are brought up on the agenda so that you can understand it and you can turn around and explain it easily to a citizen, someone who comes to you for the same type of explanation. Another thing that I've noticed is that the simplicity of the presentations of information is not, it's too complicated. And I'll give just a brief example. The last assembly meeting, there was an $8 million bond issue on the agenda. Some really important things to know that just weren't apparent from the way the packet that was presented was a total project cost, what the total life cycle cost of the project was, what grants or matching funds were coming with that, and what the alternatives were, and what were the potential results of each alternative. So,
Thank you, Brennan Carter. And finally, Sheila Finkenbinder.
Hi, thank you. So the role of the assembly in the day-to-day operations of the city, it's the staff that operates what goes on in the city on the day-to-day basis. The role of the assembly is to set policy and direction and basically to tell the administrator and the attorney this is where we want you to go. These are the things that we want you to get done. And then hold them accountable for getting those things done and reporting back to you at the next meeting and however long you need to keep on top of them to get those things done. But that's their role. A lot of information is available to the assembly members before the meetings happen. For instance, I read through the packet when they were discussing the float plane dock the other day, and it was really thick, very complete packet that went back for years of all the time that they'd been researching this float plane dock. And so I was able to get a lot of background information just from reading that packet. But also, as Brennan said, you need to go outside of that and do your own research and question, did I get everything in this packet that I was given from the city, which often includes negative views on things. But also you need to go out and Google or listen to the news or talk to people and find out what were the other questions that I might be wanting to ask about this particular issue so we can really get to a good answer. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Sheila Finkenbinder. And it's interesting you all say this because it is true that in assembly packets, what will often be there is a memo from the city, but not necessarily other opinions about that same project or issue. So that is very true, what you are all saying. I'd like to open up the floor to our wonderful audience. Claire Sanchez is the woman with the microphone and the feet. So just state your name for the record. Ooh, I sound like an assembly member. State your name for the record and your question in a succinct way, if you could, so they can keep it in their brain.
Okay, thank you. My name is Larry Cruz. I got a question. It was actually just Brennan that just touched on it, and it has to do with proposals that are brought onto the assembly. Like right now, you have an $8 million bond, and I believe that's for the water. Now, or if that was the harbor, okay, but you have the water issue coming up with a backup supply of water out of Indian River. How are you guys going to feel about, you know, voting that down or not going after it, because it really is not a substantial thing that's needed? One is because we haven't had it in a long time. We haven't, you know, we have substantial water coming out of Blue Lake. The other issue would be is back to how would you feel about going up against the federal government on something like the Clean Water Act? If you know, years ago, we had the UV protection that went in. And that really does not serve our purpose at all, because that was designed originally for a certain protozoa that we don't even have, and we are proven we don't have. But will you do what it takes to stand up against something like that and say, we'll take on the government for that, as opposed to just falling over and letting these guys say what they want to do?
And Larry, to clarify, are you talking about the critical secondary water source?
Yes.
Great. Yeah, so to summarize, Sitka, the city and borough of Sitka wants to build a secondary water source in the event our primary water source fails. They have raised water rates 20% to pay for that project. Sounds like what Larry wants to know is, what do you think of that project? And the UV component is because there are federal regulations that prevent the city of Sitka from taking drinking water from Indian River. And there might be a possibility of a waiver. It hasn't been discussed in depth. It's been discussed at the assembly. I shouldn't say that. But what do you think of those two things?
Blue Lake.
Okay. Thank you very much, Larry. Kevin, it's yours.
Okay. This is a great question. I wish I had more than 2 minutes. The water rate increases, I don't know what I think about that. I think they were minimal, so that was good. But as far as the secondary water supply, I'm really opposed to it, and I'm all in favor of fighting the government or doing everything we can to get a waiver. I went to a meet and greet a couple weeks ago that Senator Dan Sullivan went to, and I talked to one of his staff members, and I was bringing this up to her about the possibility of getting help from our Alaska congressional delegation to get a waiver for this. And she had mentioned that, she said something to the effect of, well, I just talked to someone at the city from your city people today and assembly members, and that really was nice. But at the same time, I'm wondering, was that her first time hearing that? And if so, that's scary, because we've been spending thousands of dollars to try to prepare for this and raising rates for this without even getting help, seeing if we can get help first. The first thing we should be doing is getting, you know, from the congressional delegation, everything we can do to fight this, because that we're looking at spending 20 to 40, it's not just $20 million, it's 20 to 40, you know, for something that adds no value whatsoever. I think it's ridiculous, it's crazy, and I am against it 100% and doing everything we can to stop that. I think it's frivolous. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin Mosher. And Valerie Nelson, same question.
I'm not afraid to go toe-to-toe with the federal government. It's an unfunded mandate, and they need to kick in. In these economic downturns, I doubt we would get any help from the state, but I have a history, too, of not being afraid to fight big government. I've filed several administrative appeals against the city of Sitka, prevailed on some and failed on the others. But when I see something that I don't agree with, I'm not afraid to stand up against government and bureaucracies. As far as the harbor, I don't agree with those rate increases because it's very easy for somebody to take their boat to Petersburg or Wrangell where they're paying a lot lower rates. And I have lifelong friends that are fishermen that have lived here and decided that they could more afford living in Wrangell and Petersburg. And if everybody leaves, who's going to pay for those bonds or however we fund it? Who's going to pay those? I mean, we look at what we've had years and years for, like, wait lists in the harbor. Guess what? We have empty stalls in the harbor now because the people that can trailer their boats are. They're not about to figure out a way that they can, you know, go bankrupt paying their mortgage rates. Thanks.
Thank you, Valerie Nelson. And Brennan Carter.
The secondary water source issue is really interesting because just 3 or 4 years ago, the previous staff member who was in charge of the water department and public utilities, they were committed to converting 100% to Blue Lake so that we wouldn't need a secondary water source on Indian River. And something has changed in the time between then and now. I know when we switched over to Blue Lake, we had a temporary secondary water source, and that cost us, I think, $18 million to run for the brief period that it was active. I really would like to see more information on this particular issue because I generally believe that if the federal government is going to require us to have a particular standard, if we are truly going to lose $1 million a day in fish processing capability if our primary water source goes down in fishing season, that we need to be serious about it and to require or pursue funding from the same agencies or the same level of government that's making the requirement on the city, because it's only fair. Otherwise, it is an unfunded mandate, like Valerie says, and that the city, just like anyone, needs to be relieved of unfunded mandates. So,
thank you, Brennan Carter. And Sheila Finkenbinder, the same question from Larry Cruz.
I believe that the city is both preparing to build this $18 million plant and at the same time talking with people at the federal level about the necessity to really build this plant. I agree with most of the members here in that I don't have a problem at all in questioning the federal government and whether we actually need this. We definitely don't want to borrow another $18 million to do something that we don't absolutely need to do. We need to spend that money, if we had it, in a lot of other ways that would benefit the town. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila Finkenbinder. And Blossom Twitchell.
Thank you, Emily. Looking at the situation and this secondary water source and this federal mandate, looking at what they are requiring and what our capabilities are right now, the question is, do we need this in the event of a water failure? Sources say probably not. We really don't have $18 million to spend on it. So I'm pushing for this waiver. with that waiver comes the decision of knowing that I put my faith in our water system now. And I'm also okay with the decision of fighting the federal government. I have had history in fighting the government. I've stood up against the Bureau of Indian Affairs with their usage of terminology. And I've also stood up against even the Canadian government on mining issues. So my voice is there, right, with Sitkins concerned about this. With that decision as well, I also have to be informed that if there is a water failure, that would be a boil water notice, and that would be about $1 million a day. So that is an issue. We do have to be informed. We do have to make a decision. And right now, I'm really pushing for that waiver. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Blossom Twitchell, and all of you for answering that question. I want to take a moment to let you listening and those of you in the audience know that we recognize that not every question can be answered here tonight, which is why we put together on our website the KCAW Election Hub. These individuals answered the same 14 questions, and you can see how they answered those questions. Some of them were biographical, by the way, like how old are you? But others were, what's your philosophy for funding city government? The city will soon enter negotiations to sell Sitka Community and Search. Do you support the merger? Why or why not? Where is your stance on the ballot questions? Housing, infrastructure is mentioned, and also your leadership style and temperament. So all that information is on our website because we recognize we can't answer everything tonight. And it's just at kcaw.org. Another question from the audience. I'd like one. If you want a shot, just raise your hand really high. Over here. Claire Sanchez is coming with the microphone. And I think the first person up is Valerie, correct? Yes.
Hi, good evening. My name is Leah Mason, and I am hoping to get a sense from the people who are hoping to represent us about your perspective on the need to reduce our carbon footprint as a city. And one of the questions that has come from a group of people who've been working on this kind of project for a year now through the Sitka Health Summit, the CO2 Reduction Group. Some of you are probably familiar with their activities. They are interested in knowing what your support might be for initiatives such as encouraging new building and developments to utilize the hydroelectric heating systems, the heat pumps from our Blue Lake Dam electricity, using that particular source rather than the diesel that we have been, and whether you would support incentives such as waived or reduced building permit fees or waived or reduced sales tax. Would you support those particular types of programs, and would you have other suggestions for creating incentives to build in a way that is going to reduce our carbon footprint?
Thank you so much, Leah. Your question goes to Valerie Nelson first from the Carbon CO2 Reducers Group.
I would not encourage reduced rates or fees. I think we get into problems when we have selective enforcement of our rates and fees and our laws. I am not a member of the Bags for Change or the, but I believed I heard you on Problem Corner about don't idle your car, don't start it early and whatnot. And I agree with those things. I am not in favor of the Bags for Change and charging 15 cents per bag. And I still, you know, I guess that's going to be on the assembly agenda in another week. But everything that, for every action, there's a reaction. And when you're increasing the cost to the merchant to do business and take this fee and then submit it to the city, I just disagree with all that because people are struggling and we need to do everything we can to reduce costs, not continually increase. Yes, as far as more eco-friendly environmental building, I would be in support of that, but not a reduction in fees and taxes. Thanks.
Thank you, Valerie Nelson. Brennan Carter.
Okay. Carbon footprint's an important part of what we need to be working towards. I think, in general, Sitka has a really great carbon footprint as a community already. I do think that it's not really going to be possible financially for the assembly to subsidize a lot of activities at this point. In general, I'm not in favor of subsidies where the market is already moving in the direction it needs to go. And the prime example is electric vehicles here in Sitka. Everybody's realized that, you can buy a Nissan Leaf for $11,000 to $14,000 and ship it into this community and pay essentially a third to a half of the fuel cost anyway by switching to electric. And the vehicle's a wonderful vehicle. So I don't think that there's really any point in subsidizing the market in that way. I do think that insulation standards, having new buildings in Sitka and having an insulation program makes a lot of sense because it has a relatively short period of return. In other words, it costs a little bit, and then within 3 or 4 years, it's actually valuable for the homeowner that adopts it. I think a lot of cases the city could help with that, but I do think that the housing authorities here in town and some of the energy programs at the federal and state level need to be tapped for that as well.
I think that is time. Thank you very much, Brennan Carter. Sheila Finkenbinder.
I agree a lot with Brennan that I think that the market is going in the direction of energy efficiency. I recently built an accessory dwelling unit in my backyard that I moved into, and the builders will tell you, put in a heat pump. So when you're building new, probably everybody's putting in energy efficient heating units as well as the appropriate insulation. It's all in the codes. Whether the city could help fund help with retrofitting homes or buildings, I doubt that we have the money. I know that there is still some weatherization money around. I took advantage of that a couple of years ago from the state. And there is still some, I think, that BHA is advertising that they have some weatherization money. So they know exactly what to do to help your home become more energy efficient and bring down the CO2 level in town. So thank you.
Thank you, Sheila. Finkenbinder, Blossom Twitchell.
Thank you. On this issue with carbon footprints, I think this is a bigger picture situation. As a person of the human race, as you look around what's going on in the world with the weather and the storms and the amount of plastics that are happening, it is concerning. And when you look at it from that perspective, one of the last resources that we have is our environment here in Alaska. That's our bread and butter right now. That's what's going. We don't have logging. We don't have oil, or what we do have isn't bringing in what it did. So on that note, as an assembly person, you do have to look at these issues and make an informed decision. Does that mean that we're going to go ahead and do a ban or subsidize? There's going to be some give and take right now, because looking at the budget, it's just, what can we do? What can we work towards? What can be realistic? And so getting the word out there that it is important. What can new businesses do? What can new homeowners do? What can rental property owners do to help reduce this issue? That's the question. That's what we need to push. But it's also a lot of compromise. So that's my stance. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Blossom Twitchell. And finally, Kevin Mosier.
Hi. So as far as the carbon footprint, I empathize with us needing to do that. I think there is a lot of that has already happened, and people are doing that of their free will. But I am opposed to any mandates that on any building codes that would add cost to contractors or people building houses. I just am not in favor of adding any more cost on people. I think that the weatherization program with the state is great, and we should encourage people to do that. Encourage also is definitely sometimes it's like a code word for adding more costs on people, and I'm not okay with that. I think that people are already doing these kind of things on their own, and let them do that, people, as they want to. But I don't think we should be as forcing things on people at all. As far as the plastic bag fee, I am opposed to that, and I kind of agree with what Valerie said. You know, there's consequences of everything that we do, and I'm not 100%, just on a little research that I've done, I'm not 100% convinced that that ban would even be necessarily beneficial for the environment. I know some people would argue adamantly against that, but because of people using thicker bags for, you know, people in Sitka, they have, a lot of people reuse their small C. Martin Lakeside bags for their grocery or their garbage at home. So instead of doing, you know, now we'll be using bigger bags and thicker bags. So I don't even know if that's helpful. Plus, it's adding too much of a burden on the merchants and vendors in Sitka. It's just too much. And then also adding a cost for people. We're talking about cost of living, and then we're talking about adding a cost, more cost, just not doable. So I empathize, and I encourage people to do that and to, of their good and of their free will, to take care of the environment on their own. But I don't feel like the government should be mandating anything. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kevin Mosier. We have 1 minute left, folks, before we wrap up for the evening. And I have the perfect question in my back pocket. It's a yes or no question from Sarah. So you can pretend you're voting on the assembly. I'm going to allow you, though, to say in a sentence after your vote why, to be more charitable to you. Sheila Finkenbinder, the question is, it is Brennan. Don't pass the hot potato too fast. Okay, so the question is, will you vote yes or no on the Stand for Salmon initiative? If your answer is I don't have an answer, that's fine too, but that's what Sarah wants to know. Will you vote yes or no on the Stand for Salmon initiative?
Sitka is a salmon community. I'm going to vote yes because it's one of the few renewable resources in Alaska that will come back to us every year. And if we don't protect that, we can't protect anything.
Thank you, Brennan Carter. Sheila Finkenbinder?
I'm voting no because I'm voting for the people of Alaska and the industries in Alaska. And I think that we already provide a lot of protection for the salmon. We also need to protect the other industries and the people of Alaska.
Thank you, Sheila Finkenbinder. Blossom Twitchell.
I'm voting yes, because as an Alaska Native, growing up in Alaska, in this beautiful land that gives and gives to us, that's what I can do, is give back to the salmon and ensure that for generations to come, we do have this resource, and we do have that cultural knowledge, and we do have that industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Blossom Twitchell. Kevin Mosier?
I'm voting no, and this is because from the research I've done, that we already have regulations in place to protect salmon, and that what this does is effectively shuts down development and progress in Alaska. And I'm not talking about progress and smokestacks on every corner. I'm talking about simple things. Everything's going to be a required study when there's already protections in place. And I do care about salmon, and that needs to be preserved and protected, but I think this is the name of it even is misleading, so I will be voting no.
Thank you, Kevin Mosier. And Valerie Nelson.
Well, I like to think how I vote is my own business, but I'm leaning towards no, and mainly because I see fishermen with signs and posters saying, please vote no on one. And I know that it has to do with that. So, you know, I still have 6 weeks to make up my mind.
Thank you.
You do indeed. Though you listening at home in the audience have only 2 weeks to make up your mind about the individuals seated here, they are your candidates for two open seats on the Sitka Assembly. And I thank you all so very much for joining us this evening. Can we give them a round of applause, please? And you've been hearing from Brennan Carter, Sheila Finkenbinder, Blossom Twitchell, Kevin Mosher, and Valerie Nelson. Stick around. The mayor candidates will be up next. And again, check out our election hub on our website for answers to more questions from each of them in their own words. I'm Emily Kwong. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to go to a quick break, and then Robert Woolsey will be back in 5 minutes.